Today, a blessing in disguise. We'll have a look at that interesting expression. Also, a pair of Levi's jeans selling for $60,000. But are they really worth it? Also, pronunciation, the silent E, some vocabulary for checking into a hotel, and some business as we'll talk about solvency, liquidity, and ways to measure the viability of a business. All that and more. So let's get started.
You're listening to The Kyle Miller Show.
All right, folks, welcome to The Kyle Miller Show. That's right, it's time for another edition of the program. And here we are in quarantine, recording this show. I'm creating this show today from my home. And something that I didn't think I would be doing a few weeks ago. I never imagined that I would be recording a radio show from my home. But I guess it's just an indication of a lot of things that have been going on where people are creating content, people are learning new things, people are learning to bake, people are baking bread. And I went to the grocery store the other day and they're sold out of flour, harina, because so many people are baking bread. And so many people are cooking new dishes and learning new things in the kitchen, or they're adopting new exercise plans, or they're learning how to play the guitar, or maybe they're investing in learning English. And if that's what you're doing, then I hope that I can help you in some way. But the quarantine has, at least so far, served to show, the good in everyone, maybe. We've learned a lot about each other, and we've learned that people, for the most part, want to, people are naturally good and they want to help out. So in a way, you know, you have to look on the bright side. As we say, when you're given a lemon, make lemonade. Maybe there are aspects of this that are a blessing in disguise. That's a good expression too, a blessing in disguise. By the way, disguise, that's always disfraz. Disguise. We have costume, disfraz, or disfrazar, disfrazarse in Spanish could be to disguise or to dress up as well, to dress up. Now, so we have three different terms here, to dress up, to disguise, a disguise as a noun and a costume. Those are nouns, but to dress up is basically to wear a costume. Llevar disfraz. Or it's also to dress elegantly. Like, you know, for my wedding, I will dress up. I had to dress up for the graduation ceremony or for the banquet, for the party, to dress up, right? To dress in an elegant way. And a disguise, eso es un disfraz, but a disguise is to hide your identity. Whereas a costume is to pretend to be someone else. So if I dress and I want people to think that I'm Superman, I would wear a costume for Halloween. I'm dressed up as, we say dressed up as, disfrazarse como. In English, you say to dress up as Superman, for example. To wear a costume. Whereas a disguise is like a celebrity, like Beckham. If David Beckham wants to walk down the Gran Vía in Madrid, he'd have to wear a disguise so that people don't recognize him. So disguises are about hiding your real identity, whereas a costume is about pretending you are someone else. But the expression, a blessing in disguise, una bendición disfrazado, basically, a blessing in disguise. It means, well, there's something good here. Sometimes you have to look for it, but there is something good here underneath all of this. And a good thing to do right now is take the time, if you have some extra time, to work on your English. How about a little grammar as we get things started? Let's take a look at some grammar. And I want to practice the structure to be worth, which is a structure that is kind of mysterious to a lot of people to be worth. ¿Cuánto vale eso? How much is that worth? ¿Cuánto vale un Rolls Royce? How much is a Rolls Royce worth? Which is not the same as how much does it cost, right? We could get into economics here, but ¿cuánto cuesta y cuánto vale? These are really two different things. The cost is what you would pay in financial and in money terms, but what something is worth includes an intrinsic value as well. So it's worth more than I thought. It's worth more than the price. So if something is worth more than the price to you, then you should buy it. If it's not worth the price, then you shouldn't buy it. Right? So this is should be how we make purchase decisions. If something is worth more to us than the money, right? I'd rather have this cold Pepsi. Right now I'm thirsty, so I'd rather have the cold Pepsi than the €1 that I can pay to get it. So for me, it's worth it, so I should buy it. Which is why if you say, well, how much is a Rolls Royce worth? If a Rolls Royce costs, I don't know, $100,000, but if you are Jeff Bezos, I think the richest man in the world, or Bill Gates, one of these people, you know, maybe the money means nothing to you. So for you, it's worth it. But if you don't have a lot of money, then it's probably not worth it. So remember, valer, cuánto vale, we say to be worth. How much is it worth? To be worth. Okay, so this is a good structure to know. And we can practice with this structure. Okay, there are actually a lot of structures with this. They have to be worth, it is worth it. It's worth more, it's worth less. How much is it worth? Okay. For example, I could say, my watch is worth a lot to me. It's worth more than the price. It's worth more than what I could get for it if I sold it, because I have a watch that was given to me by my first girlfriend. She gave me a watch, and I keep that watch because it's worth a lot to me. I could probably sell it for, I don't know, 25 euros. But it's worth much more than that to me because it has a sentimental value, an intrinsic value. Okay? You could also say that friendship is worth a lot. La amistad de Julia significa mucho para María. Julia's friendship is worth a lot to Maria. You could also say it means a lot to her. It's worth a lot to her. Okay? Estos viejos vinilos son muy valiosos para Richard. These old records, sometimes we say vinyls as well. These old records are worth a lot to Richard. They're worth a great deal. Now, we also have to be worth more or to be worth less. Right? So I could say, well, my watch is worth less than it used to be. Right? Vale menos que antes. Yeah, because it's scratched. It's not worth as much as it used to be. Okay? Tener muchos amigos vale más que tener una fortuna. Eso es cierto. Having good friends... Bueno, buenos amigos, más que muchos amigos. Yo creo que es más importante tener buenos amigos que muchos amigos. Having good friends is worth more than having a fortune. I think that's true. Una fortuna, a fortune, chin, a fortune. I think that's true. Y estar sano es mucho más valioso que ser rico. Being healthy is worth more than being rich. Yes. Okay, so we also have to be worthwhile. Merecedor, o bueno, que merece la pena. This idea of merece la pena, it's worth it. People think this is an expression, but it's really not. We're just using pronouns the way we always use them. It is worth it. So the first it represents what we're getting or what we're contemplating getting, and the second it represents what we are paying, what we're giving up, okay? So this class, I say, oh, I'll give you this wonderful English class, and all you have to give me is an hour of your time. You don't even have to pay for this show. You're just giving me an hour of your time. You're investing your time, right? Even though the English class here is free, you're investing your time, but hopefully it's worth it. It is worth it. The English you get from this, the benefit of that you get from this, is worth the hour. It's worth the time. Okay? It's worth what you're giving up. It's worth the cost. Okay, to be worth it. So now we also have worthless. It's worth it. Que no vale nada. Right? No vale nada. Like, I don't know, what's something that's worthless? Maybe an old calendar. A calendar from 1996, it's worthless. You know, the dates have gone by. It's completely worthless. Now, there's another structure that we use here that's interesting, which is measuring something in a, for example, a monetary value, like saying €2 worth of candy. So you go to the shop, you go to one of those bulk shops where you can get candy by the bag, by the weight, or per kilo, and you say, bueno, dame pues dulces por valor de dos euros, no? €2 worth of candy. Or, you know, €5 worth of flour, harina. In Canada, there's a store called the Bulk Barn. Granero de Graneles, which is actually almost a great, better name in Spanish. The Bulk Barn, a granel, in bulk, to buy in bulk, we say, to buy in bulk. But the Bulk Barn is a store where you can go, and everything is sold in these big bins, these big containers, and you have a ladle, like a scoop, like a giant spoon, and you pick up a certain amount of whatever you want, and you put it into your bags, and you weigh it. Hay que pesarlo. And then you pay, you know, as a bulk quantity. So you can buy flour, you can buy candies, you can buy, you know, all sorts of, nuts and spices. You could buy salt and different types of sugar and all this sort of thing. All that sort of stuff. So, €2 worth. Right, I could say, for example, mi padre compró en Rusia caviar por valor de 300 euros. My father bought €300 worth of caviar in Russia. El año pasado la compañía encargó de software por valor de 1,000,000 euros. Last year the company ordered €1,000,000 worth of software. Mm-hmm. At Christmas time, I go to Canada and I go to that store I was telling you about, the Bulk Barn, and I usually buy $20 or $30 worth of candy. And then I spend the holiday season, among other things, eating a lot of candy, too much candy. All right? But as a pure verb, well, as a pure, more basic structure, to be worth, no vale lo que cuesta. It's not worth the money. It's not worth what it costs, or it's not worth the money. No vale la espera. It's not worth the wait. Or on the other hand, valió la pena la espera. It was worth the wait. Siempre vale la pena intentarlo. It's always worth a try, or it's always worth trying. Now notice, if we use the verb here, if we're going to use the verb, then we're going to use the ing. It's worth trying. It's not worth getting upset about. No vale la pena disgustarse por tan poca cosa. It's not worth getting upset about such a little thing. Okay? To be worth. All right. Now, speaking of this, this made me think about some different items that are worth, apparently worth, incredible amounts of money. Let's take a look at this. Some things that are worth maybe more than you thought. The first one is The Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man comic, a Spider-Man, is a Spider-Man. Spider-Man. The first issue of the Spider-Man comics. Now, it had the cover value, the face value was 12 cents. But it's now worth $40,000 or more. And this one, recently sold at an auction for a little over $40,000. That's a good way of saying, well, how much is it worth? That's what it costs on the open market. But in terms of dollar value, you could say, I suppose, that's what it's worth. Also, how about this? How about a pair of jeans, a pair of Levi's, Los Levis? We say Levi's, Levi's 501. Now, the 501 is the most famous, the most typical model of jeans. And a collector. Now, this is a fellow, a Japanese guy, bought an original pair. One of the original pairs from the 1880s of the original Levi's jeans. And he paid $60,000 for a pair of jeans on eBay. So is it worth it? I mean, again, this guy must have huge amounts of money. Or maybe he figures, maybe he knows someone else who's willing to pay more. So maybe he says, well, it's worth it because I know I can sell it to someone else. All right. Here's another one. Baseball cards. Now, in Spanish, you say los cromos. And I guess kids used to collect or they collect football cards. Cromos de fútbol, no? In English, we would have, we would call them cards. Card, by the way, can be tarjeta, cartas, tarjetas, carta de visita. I guess you say tarjeta de visita, business cards. But baseball cards are famously collectible. In Canada, I grew up collecting hockey cards. Hockey sobre hielo, claro, ice hockey, hockey cards. But there is a card, the most expensive sports card ever sold is the Honus Wagner baseball card. And this one sold for $1.26 million. And this was sold several years ago. It was made by the American Tobacco Company. And apparently there were 200 of these cards made. But Honus Wagner, who was a very famous baseball player, apparently he said after they started making these cards, see, most cards there would be thousands made, but after they only made 200, he said, I don't want to be associated with this brand. He didn't want to be associated with cigarettes. They were made by American Tobacco. And Honus Wagner, this famous baseball player, said, I don't want to be associated with that, so please stop making the cards. So as a result, very few of them were made, only 200 cards, and he was a great baseball player. And I think this was in the 1930s or 40s or so, Honus Wagner. And, or maybe before that, maybe even the 1920s, I'll have to check. But because they are so rare, so scarce, this one is worth a lot more. So $1.26 million. It's the most rare and, I suppose, desired baseball card. How about this? How about William Shakespeare's autograph? And I don't know exactly how much they were sold for. We don't know, but several of them were sold in private auctions on original plays written by Shakespeare and hand-signed, and they were sold for huge amounts of money. I can imagine, yeah, an autographed Shakespeare play. Can you imagine? Now, here's a strange one. Here's a strange one. A little over $1,000 for Justin Timberlake's breakfast. Un desayuno medio comido por Justin Timberlake. Half eaten. And this was back in 2000. A 19-year-old girl spent $1,025 on Justin Timberlake's half-eaten breakfast. Now, this was when he was at his peak with the group NSYNC. And he was a guest on an early morning radio show. And he took a couple of bites of French toast, which is something that I like. In fact, I made French toast last weekend while he was there. And apparently, after he left, one of the radio DJs took his leftovers and listed them on eBay. The auction website, that Subasta auction website, and the winning bid was placed by a fan, a mega fan named Kathy Summers from Wisconsin. And I wonder what she did with that. I mean, what do? You spend 1,000 euros on buying someone's half-eaten breakfast? I don't understand this stuff. I don't understand it. But here's a good one. Here's another one. How about Jimi Hendrix's famous burnt guitar? Right? So Jimi Hendrix famously, while he was on stage, this was at the Astoria in London, he set his guitar on fire in concert. And a fan bought this years later in 2008. Someone paid almost $500,000, $497,500 for the Stratocaster that was intentionally damaged by the fire. Now, damaged, of course, but that damage was what made it stand out. And it sold for, my gosh, almost $500,000. It was back in 1967 that he lit the guitar on stage. Sorry, on fire while on stage. So there you go. So what's it worth? What is it worth? Now, it's not worth $500,000 to me, but to evidently to someone it is, or maybe an investor who figures they can sell it for more. Anyway, let's take a look at some adjectives using the word worthy. These are compound adjectives. Adjetivos compuestos, compound adjectives. So we can use worthy in the idea of digno or merecido or merecedor, que merece algo, right? Like worthy, quite simply, digno. Now, the interesting thing here is that the pronunciation, we don't say worthy. You say, how much is it worth? ¿Cuánto vale? How much is it worth? But then we say worthy. We don't say worthy, we say were, worthy, were, almost like the past of the verb to be in a plural. We were here, we were worthy. Éramos dignos, we were worthy, okay? And then unworthy, indigno, unworthy, okay? Worthy, unworthy, roadworthy, apto para circular. Is your car roadworthy? So you go to the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, and you get it checked. You have to get your car inspected, checked out every so often to see if it is roadworthy, and it gets approved. Trustworthy, digno de confianza. Trustworthy, newsworthy, de interés periodístico. Newsworthy. So it's like deserving of being on the news. Seaworthy, en condiciones de navegar, we could say. So apto para circular en la carretera, roadworthy, seaworthy. My car is roadworthy, and my boat is seaworthy. Noteworthy, digno de atención, noteworthy. Praiseworthy, digno de elogio. Airworthy, en condiciones de volar. So the airplane is airworthy, the boat is seaworthy, and the car, hopefully, is roadworthy. So, worthy, deserving of. And we push these words to, we take the word worthy and we put something at the start. We create a compound adjective. Worthy. So, there you go. There you go. So, to be worth and worthy, an interesting topic. You can listen to this again. You can rewind this episode to hear the explanations again and practice and hopefully gain agility with this structure, to be worth.
Pronunciation.
That's right, pronunciation. Today, well, a fairly easy pronunciation idea. We're going to talk about a silent letter, the silent E. So when the E, cuando no pinta nada, esto es pan comido, it's a piece of cake. It's very easy, but sometimes it causes problems because when the E becomes silent, people want to pronounce an extra vowel and an extra syllable, but we have to remember not to pronounce a syllable. For example, vegetable, verdura, vegetable. We say vegetable, we don't say vegetable. We say vegetable, three syllables, da da da. Joyería, jewelry, jewelry, da da da, jewelry. Different, different. So it's almost as if the E in the middle weren't there. We don't say different, we say different. Two syllables. Pavement, acera, pavement. Interesting, interest, interested. Evening, la tarde, tarde noche, evening. Every, cada, every. We don't say every, we say every, every. Okay, now this is easier. The silent E is easier when it comes at the end of a word, like bucear would be to dive. Dar, give. Conducir, drive. Hive, alive. Strive, esforzarse, strive. Strive for excellence. Okay, that one's a bit easier. But when the silent E comes in the middle of a word, it can be a little bit more challenging. We also have words like, with the EY, like money. Dinero, money. We don't say money, we say money. Money. Abby, donkey, mono, donkey. Honey, alley. Kidney, riñón, kidney. Okay. So we can practice with these words a little bit more. And actually, we can practice with some tongue twisters. Trabalenguas, practicando la pronunciación de. We're going to practice with that in a few minutes after the break. So we're going to take a quick break, everybody, and then we're going to come back. We'll practice a little bit more pronunciation, and we'll move on with plenty more, as we have lots more to come in our show. We're going to go to the hotel and look at some vocabulary, and we're going to get back to business and talk about solvency and liquidity in our business section. We have a few challenges for you and plenty more to come in the second half hour, so stay with us. All right, folks, our song today is from the 1998 album Stunt by the Canadian band The Bare Naked Ladies. And the song is Alcohol. And I'm not trying to promote the consumption of alcohol. This is a song that looks at alcohol abuse. And it's a song that I actually just discovered about a week or two ago. But not a performance by the Bare Naked Ladies, but rather by a Canadian supergroup, if you will, a group formed by members of four separate Canadian bands, the group called the Trans-Canada Highwaymen, who do a fantastic version of the song. So if you like what you hear, check out the version by the Trans-Canada Highwaymen. But I thought I'd go back to the original on this one. This is a song written by Stephen Page and performed by the Bare Naked Ladies, like I said, from the 1998 album Stunt, and it's called Alcohol.
Alcohol, my permanent accessory. Alcohol, a part-time necessity. Alcohol, alternative to feeling like yourself. Oh, alcohol. I love you more than I did the week before.
Welcome back to the Kyle Miller Show. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Kyle Miller Show. It's time for the second half hour of our program for today. And before the break, we were talking about pronunciation. That's right, we were talking about the silent E in words like vegetable, which is a great word. Really, I could spend time just talking about this word, words like vegetable, or there are other words where you tend to pronounce an extra syllable in Spanish more than necessary. Vegetable. We don't say vegetable, but vegetable. Jewelry. Joyería. Jewelry. Different. Pavement. Evening. Okay? Of course, other cases with the silent E are much easier, especially when it appears at the end of words like dive, give, hive, love, save, right? So notice how the silent E appears after a V. But then in other words, for example, money, the E-Y, E like money, honey, attorney, case abogado, which is a very American way of saying lawyer, kidney, riñón, kidney, pricey, which is an adjective to mean that something is caro, que algo es caro, something's expensive. Ooh, it's a little pricey. I'd love to buy a Rolls Royce, but it's too pricey. Okay, so let's practice with a few example sentences. Trabalenguas, as you like to say, tongue twisters. ¿Cómo se dice en inglés? Él come verduras y miel cada tarde. Well, it wouldn't be such an unhealthy thing to eat. Él come miel, bueno, verduras y miel cada tarde. He eats vegetables and honey every evening. Cada tarde. Every evening. Well, every afternoon, but every evening. Let's use that word. Él vende joyas con un carrito por los callejones y gana mucho dinero. He sells jewelry from a trolley in back alleys, and makes loads of money. Gana mucho dinero. He makes loads of money. He makes a lot of money. Me encanta bucear en la cala cerca de las cuevas. I love diving in the cove, near the caves. Cerca de las cuevas. I love diving in the cove near the caves. Cove. I love diving in the coves near the caves. In the cove, la cala. Okay, so, yeah, all these exercises, you know, we do so many things on this show where we say, okay, it's pronunciation time, but you can always pick up little bits of vocabulary throughout the show, and you're developing your ear. And this, I'm developing the show. The show is a work in progress, and we'll be having new sections coming up all the time. So if it's something you'd like to hear on the show, if you'd like to hear maybe some strange news stories or current events, that sort of thing, or maybe my opinion on certain things, these are all sections that I plan to build into the show. But if you have ideas, of course I'm open because this show is for you. I'm doing this for you to help you improve and to give you hopefully an enjoyable lesson to help you with your English.
It's business. It's business time.
I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business. It's business time.
All right, you know I love business. In fact, so much that I wrote the book on business English. It is called Business English. You can get it everywhere now. And I talk in the book about solvency and about liquidity. And I know people who run restaurants in Madrid, and I remember going to business school and learning that restaurants were or are maybe the toughest common type of business that you can run. The most difficult to really make profitable. And the reason why they're so difficult to make profitable is, well, there are a few reasons. One is because everybody likes restaurants. Everybody thinks that they can, well, everybody thinks that they know a lot about restaurants because they've gone to restaurants, so they think that they could do a good job of running one. So you have a lot of people entering the space who don't know enough about business. Maybe they know about food, but they don't know much about business. So you have a market full of competition, so it's inevitable that a lot of the competitors in that field are going to fail. And even businesses that are well-run, they can lose business because there's simply so much competition in the space, right? It seems like as an expression I like to use, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, which means everyone, wants to open a restaurant. And so many entrepreneurs that do different types of things at one point in their entrepreneurial career often operate or get involved in a restaurant venture. And very often they fail. Two reasons: they fail because there's just too much competition and they just generally don't know what they're doing. But the second reason is, the reason why they end up failing, sort of linked to the first, but is what we call liquidity problems. So, and I mentioned this before, how my accounting professor in university always said, cash is king, el efectivo, cash. Cash is king. Cash is the most important thing because you're able to pay your bills immediately with cash when you have money. It's not receivables, not money you're going to get later, but money you have right now, cash. So we have different ratios and different ways of quantifying the amount of cash we have on hand and trying to determine if it is enough. But when we talk about the solvency of a company, we have solvency and liquidity, I should say. First, I should say liquidity. Liquidity refers to a company's ability to meet short-term obligations. So, do you have enough money available? Do you have enough cash on hand? Enough liquid assets? And the most liquid of all assets is, like I say, cash. So that's liquidity. Now, solvency is kind of like profitability in general. Solvency, if a company is solvent, it means over time, they are generally bringing in more money than they're spending. So over time, they're making money and they are eventually cash flow positive, or eventually having a positive income, okay, and positive net income. So they're not losing money over time. So you have these two different things: liquidity, which is more short term, and your ability to meet short term obligations, and then you have solvency. Okay, and with these things, we have different financial statements. You have three main financial statements. We have the income statement, and on the income statement, you have revenues, ingresos, revenues minus expenses, and the difference is your profit. Beneficios económicos, your profit. Okay, and if that's negative, you would unfortunately have a loss. So profit or loss. This is why, especially in British English, and even in Spain, people hear the term the P&L, which stands for profit and loss, the statement of profit and loss. But in American English, it's more common to refer to this as the income statement. Okay, now another important statement we have is the balance sheet. Now, the income, going back to the income statement for a moment, the income statement gives you a report over a period of time. So typically you have a quarterly income statement, and then you'd have an annual income statement as well. And there are different types of statements. You can have statements that are completed internally for management decisions. You have managerial accounting, sometimes known as cost accounting, where you're running numbers in order to hopefully better make investment decisions, okay, and then you also have financial accounting, which is related to creating the financial reports for the purpose of official filings and for official reporting of your results that could be necessary to present to potential investors, okay. So the types of statements that you would submit may be slightly different depending on if they're going to be used internally or if they're going to be used for official filings. But you have the income statement, where you have the income, you have los ingresos, income, you have revenue, ingresos, minus the expenses equals profit, also known as the bottom line. And for that, from that, we get the expression in English, what's the bottom line? El resultado final. ¿Cuál es el resultado final? What's the bottom line? And that's the bottom line, right? So this is a good expression in English, which comes originally from financial terms because it's the bottom of the income statement, but it's the end result. So if your bottom line is always negative, your business is going to fail. So you say, what's the bottom line? Well, the bottom line is, look, I think the weather's nice. I think everybody's in the mood to go to the beach. So the bottom line is, on Saturday, we're all going to the beach. That's the el resultado final de la conversación. So we take it from finance, but we can apply it to other things in life. What's the bottom line? Well, what's the end result? Or what's the point of what we're talking about? What's the bottom line? So we get a lot of expressions in English from all sorts of things. But getting back to financial statements, so we have the income statement, we've seen this, also known as, también conocido como, also known as, AKA, whenever you see that expression, that acronym means also known as, también conocido como, the P&L, or the profit and loss statement, statement of profit and loss. Now, like I said, this one is an accumulation over a period. On the other hand, you have the balance sheet, which is not an accumulation. The balance sheet is a snapshot. It's like you take a photograph. You take a photograph of your business at a moment, at a period. Sorry, a moment. A moment in time. Not really a period, but not over a period, but at a given moment. And you're documenting the assets, los activos y los pasivos, the assets and liabilities. And the difference between the two is the owner's equity. Equity, okay? But so you have assets, liability, and owner's equity. So if the company has too many liabilities, they owe a lot of money, that part becomes very large. And you have different ratios, different comparisons of the values of different parts of the balance sheet that can indicate the health of a company. So I'm not going to get into that too much, but those are two of the most important financial statements. And another one that's very important, especially in the case of restaurants, is the statement of cash flows. Flujo de caja, I suppose you say, the cash flows. So this, again, relates to liquidity and a company's ability to meet short-term obligations. So liquidity is essential. So even though a company is earning a lot of money, there are companies that earn, for example, construction companies that could have a lot of contracts, but maybe they don't receive money for 2 years, a year or 2 years. But they have expenses now, so they could have liquidity problems. So the statement of cash flows indicates how much cash is actually available to meet short-term obligations, how much cash they have now, how much cash is coming in over a period, and how much cash has gone out over a period as well. So it shows you the actual movements, just like the name would indicate, the statement of cash flows, the flow, the in and out, and movement of that very valuable asset, which is cash, okay? So those are the three main financial statements, and they relate to solvency and liquidity, which are two important but different issues to consider when assessing a business from an investment perspective, or when you're looking at the general health and ongoing prospects of a business. So there you go. A little bit of business for you. Solvency and liquidity.
Vocabulary.
Vocabulary, everybody. Oh, it is that time and we're going to the hotel. Vamos al hotel. Yes, so this is important, right? If you want to go to if you go to the UK, you go to New York, you go to Chicago, you go to Toronto, you have to know your vocabulary. You have to do the facturación, the check-in, to check into the hotel, phrasal verb, to check in. And then the opposite is to check out when you leave. Like the Hotel California by the Eagles. They say, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Such a great song. Last thing to remember, I was running for the door. I had to find the passage back to the place I was before. Relax, said the night man. We're programmed to receive. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Classic song, The Eagles. And that was actually one of the best, Hotel California, that was one of the greatest selling albums of all time. You gotta know that one. On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, warm smell of colitas rising up in the air. Up ahead in the distance, I saw shimmering light. My head grew heavy and my sight grew dim. I had to stop for the night. There she stood in the doorway. I heard the mission bell, and I was thinking to myself, this could be heaven or this could be hell. What a song, right? A great song, the classic from The Eagles. But it talks about checking in, to check into the hotel, to enter, to check in, and then the opposite, to check out. I'm officially leaving, but like the song says, you can check out, but you can never leave. So now, to book, reservar, to book. This is why you have a website, e-booking, right? Facturación, bueno, reservaciones, booking, to make a reservation, reservar, to book. I'd like to book a room, please. And the lobby, el vestíbulo, the lobby, lobby, lobby. Huésped, this would be a guest. How many guests? Excuse me, how many of you are there? Or how many will there be? And this is a tricky structure. There are, you can say, well, there are two of us, or there will be two of us. Como dos de nosotros. Somos dos. No se dice we are two. We say there are two of us. Literally, hay dos de nosotros. Se dice así en inglés. We can practice that another day. To stay, alojarse, to stay. How long will you be staying? Oh, I think we'll stay for one night, please. La planta, the floor. La primera planta, first floor. Second floor. And remember, when we use, when we talk about the floors, we would say on the first floor, la primera planta, on the first floor, on the second floor, on the third floor, not in, but on. So many people say, how can I learn the prepositions in English? Me cuesta mucho. ¿Cuál es la regla? Well, there are so many exceptions. You just have to get familiar. You just have to practice with prepositions and gain fluency, right? It's better to just practice than to try to memorize rules. But we talk about a floor, como planta, que también significa suelo, but we say floor for planta, so we say on the first floor, but in the room, right? You're staying on the third floor in room 305, and we don't say the room 305, we say in room 305, la habitación, 305. This is also a case where we use the term O instead of zero. We would very seldom, or I would say never, say 305. Room 305. No, room 305. So with room numbers, we use the term O, and we would say it without the article. We say in room 305. I'm staying in room 305, and you're staying in room 207. Okay? All right, now, vistas. Quiero una habitación con vistas. I'd like a room with a view. A view. We don't normally say views. We say a view. Como con una vista. Toalla. Towel. I'd like some clean towels, please. Y las sábanas. Sábana. Sheets. Sheets. Can you change the sheets, please? Anular. To cancel. 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 Not cancel. No, cancel. Cancel. And of course, dejar la habitación, like I said, to check out. So you check in and you check out. One thing I like in Spain are the paradores. I've stayed at a few. I really enjoy them. They're You know, and I find it funny how Spanish people say, no, it's not a hotel. No, es un hotel. Es un parador. And say, well, it's true. It is different, I guess. It is different. And it's a concept that I like to explain to, I like to recommend paradores to people who come to visit from Canada or from other places. I tell them, oh, look, you should try to stay in a parador, these wonderful monasteries or castles that have been preserved and kept. And you have a wonderful opportunity to have a very unique experience, especially for someone from North America who doesn't get to see castles. They don't get to see castles very often. So to come and stay in a parador in Spain is a real treat, something that I've only done a few times, but I want to do more of because it's a great way to, nice way to add to your vacation, and usually not terribly expensive. It's not the cheapest option, but not as expensive, I think, as they could be for the type of accommodation that you usually get. Translation time. That's right, it's translation time, everybody. I'm going to give you the sentence in Spanish, and you, of course, say it out loud in English. Today, practicing gerunds and infinitives. Okay, number one. No recuerdo el haber ido allí. I don't remember going there. So remember, I remember doing it, remember seeing him, remember going there. And now in the negative, I don't remember going there. So remember is going to be followed by the ing. I don't remember going there. ¿Te puedes imaginar el tener a los dos en el equipo? Can you imagine having both of them on the team? Can you imagine having both of them on the team? A los dos en el equipo? Can you imagine having both of them on the team? No he considerado el ir allí en avión. I haven't considered going there by plane. I haven't considered going there by plane or flying there. I haven't considered flying there. I haven't considered going there by plane. No vale la pena visitar ese museo. That museum isn't worth visiting. No merece la pena visitarlo. No estoy interesado en ayudarles. I'm not interested in helping them. Interesado en, we'd say interested in. And this is interesting because it's a word that we have that silent E. We don't say interested, we say interested. Three syllables, interested. And always interesado en, we say interested in. I'm not interested in helping them and ayudarles. I'm not interested in helping them, but I am interested in helping you with your English, and hopefully I've done that today with today's program. We're going to finish there. I want to thank you so much for tuning in for another edition of The Kyle Miller Show, and we'll be back again soon with another show for you. Remember to follow on Instagram, I'm Kyle Miller, and also on Twitter. Send me your questions, and I'll build them into programs for you. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next time.